It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Hey, everybody. This is Greg Gutfeld. This is the one. I often say I'm excited about podcasts, but I'm really excited about this one because I've been trying to get this guy on this show for like 2 years. Sometimes he'll say yes, and then he'll disappear into the ether like a ghost, like a mad, brilliant ghost with amazing hair. I'm talking about Eric Weinstein, and it is Weinstein, correct?
It's absolutely Weinstein.
See? I knew it. Not like that other guy. You're the managing director of Thiel Capital. I just saw your friend speak last night, Peter Thiel.
Peter Thiel?
Yes.
In Manhattan.
Yes. And I introduced myself to him, even though I met him maybe 10 years ago at an apartment in Union Square where he was hosting something with Ann Coulter.
Uh-huh.
And it was for Go Proud. It was a gay event. And I'll never forget that Ann Coulter did a whole thing about how she was against gay marriage to this crowd. It was insane.
Really?
Yeah. But it was.
I don't get invited to the Ann Coulter event.
I know.
And when the only reason I'm doing the show today is because you told me it was part of Bernie 2020.
Yes, it is. We're going to talk about Bernie because you are a Bernie supporter.
I was a Bernie supporter in the last
election. But he went too conservative for you.
In some sense.
Yes. Okay. I'm still not even through introducing you. You're the managing director of Thiel Capital. You're also the host of a new podcast called The Portal.
The Portal. The Portal.
And the portal. what I like – ooh, that was nice. The little echo in the background. I like your concept of The Portal. I've listened to every one of the podcasts, by the way, and I enjoy it.
Fantastic.
Your idea of The Portal is like – to me, it's about discovering something in the world that gives you a glimpse into the things around you that you didn't see before, or is it about common misconceptions, or what? You tell me why.
Well, the idea came from this ubiquitous children's story in which some child finds a way out of normal reality through some unconventional object, typically a looking glass, a rabbit hole, a wardrobe, what have you. And my belief is that there's all sorts of reality that has to be discovered. It's just not present in your everyday experience. Mm-hmm. And so – in large measure, I feel very trapped in our current world, and I've lost interest in our current world. Mm-hmm. I just can't stand to hear the same arguments one more time. I don't like hearing good people run down. Mm-hmm. I don't want to hear more squabbling over silliness. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of us just want out. And mm-hmm. so the search for a way to leave whatever it is that has created the stasis, this mind-numbing miasma that permeates every aspect of civil society. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think lots of people are responding to it because lots of people want out.
You know what my portal is? Embracing everything you just hate it. I live that world.
Yeah.
So I just dive right in. Give me an example of like a portal. I remember you talking about one. It was either on Dave Rubin's show or it was on Rogan's show. But how would you describe a portal?
Well, you know, I give the example, for instance, of the Four Chord song. So mm-hmm. if you listen to the Axis of Awesome, they did this wonderful parody, or I don't know what to call it, where they do, 100 songs that all have the same chord progression.
Right.
And
I looked that up when you talked about it.
Okay. So what many people may not know is that with a coffee mug and a guitar and about 2 minutes of instruction, you can play every song that fits that four chord song without changing the tuning of a regular guitar, even if you have absolutely no musical background. Mm. You don't have to learn to finger anything. Nothing's going to hurt. There's absolutely nothing that prevents you from playing at least a mediocre version of the universal song that probably, whether it's Hey Jude or Beast of Burden or whatever it is, it's pretty amazing to find out that you can go from 0 to 60 instantly.
Yeah, and I've kind of learned this. I bought a guitar 20 years ago. It's Fender Stratocaster. It was like 1996, 97. And then I got a big job and I stopped taking lessons. And now – so I picked it up again for stress release to reduce certain other behaviors.
Okay.
But what you're talking about is astonishing. If I had only known that, because I was such a punk rock fan, I didn't realize I could do that. Like, as I'm learning all the songs and I realize, my God, these are simple, so simple, they're boring. Like, they're not that hard. I was doing Class songs, Sex Pistols songs, and I'm realizing, like, I could
now I understand what powers Fox News.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Anarchy in the UK, brother.
I play it every day on the Five. I play. You're a punk fan, aren't you?
Sure.
Yeah, I remember you talking about X.
Really?
With Bret Easton Ellis.
Yeah.
The band.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was singing this most dangerous of all songs, Johnny Hit and Run Pauline.
Probably one of my all time favorites, which I played on the Five. Oh. And they don't know what it's about. So I play the opening riff.
Yeah.
Billy Zoom, who I know and is a good friend of mine, and
So this is Chuck Berry quote, and the idea is that it's really Johnny B. Goode gone totally mutant and hitting Skid Row.
Yeah, he took a drug that turns him into a crazy rapist.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's like, but I never get to that first lyric when I'm playing it on the Five.
I see.
I just have that beautiful riff that opens up that song, and it is Chuck Berry.
Well, it's Chuck Berry diving into L.A. Woman.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I did a speech. I don't know where I was, and who was in the audience was Billy Zoom. And it was like, holy shit.
Yeah, it's like the Pope and Billy Zoom. These are the kinds of people that might be in the audience that will blow your mind.
And he is the most taciturn person. So I used to have him on my show, Red Eye, and he's the hardest person to interview. He's Clint Eastwood. He's as cool as you think. When you used to see him, we're the same age. When he was in those pictures and how he held his guitar and the face that he had, there was nobody cooler. Nobody. And you try to talk to him, and he's that person. He, every now and then.
Listen, why does Fox News have this terrible rep if you guys are into this, like, really dangerous out there?
They did, because they deny it. When I used to do Red Eye, I had Guar on all the time, Odorous Arungus. I had Billy Zoom.
Yeah.
I had a crap. Johnny Rotten's been on, I think, 3 or 4 times. And, one of my favorite
nights. How many of the Ramones?
They were all dead. Well, actually, no. I think I had Marky Ramone on. One of the next Ramones, but that was after I left Red Eye, I think. But you know who I had? One of my favorite nights ever. I had Mick Jones of The Clash and Tony James from Generation X, and they were in a band called Carbon Silicon. This has got to be about 8 years ago. We went out and we got hammered.
Right.
Absolutely hammered. And it was one of the – and I would say The Clash is my favorite band of all time. So I'm walking with Mick Jones to Langen's, this bar, and he goes – and I go, so how's it going? He goes, you know, I'm trying to be – contained,
right?
And I'm basically jelly.
Right.
And he starts talking to me, and I'm not going to do his accent, but it was very soft. He was talking about how he lost the confidence to play guitar over time, and he's just trying to get back into it. And I'm just going like, holy crap, he's telling me this stuff as we're walking to get a drink. Is that amazing? Like to have your guitar hero talking to you about how hard it is for him to get back into it. After he left Big Audio Dynamite and moved away.
I've seen this weird stuff where like really amazing people freak each other out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've ever – one of the things I love is looking for videos of boxing and MMA matches where two people knock each other out simultaneously because everybody's such an incredible badass.
Yeah.
At some point I held my 47th birthday party, and I wasn't realizing that somehow my life had changed a little bit. And all these like – totally intimidating people showed up, and all I had was like kebabs or something. And I had the guitarist Nels Klein, who's like otherworldly in his ability, for Wilco and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Just
like one of the greatest. And I found him hiding in my bedroom because Joshua Bell, the violinist, had also showed up. He's like, that's Joshua Bell out there. I said, Nels, you're Nels Klein. He's like, oh yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Thanks for reminding me. Wilco has a new album out.
Yeah?
Yeah, I haven't heard it, though. I don't know how I feel about Wilco. I go back and forth. So I like to talk about things I have strong beliefs in. Oh, you talk
– like America.
America. You know, you can't spell America without me.
Actually, you can't spell it without Eric, so let's not
– Yeah, that's true. You win. You talked about – you're a mathematician.
Yeah.
What is your normal day like? Like, what are you? So you deal with capital, obviously. What is your day like as a mathematician working with?
Well, it's changing, and you know, like I wake up with fear and dread. Then I go through sloth. I really am not a morning person.
Mm-hmm.
But recently, I've been focusing on the portal. I think I've been, you know, Peter and I have been talking about where we are in cultural history, why we're off the rails, why it's so hard to get things back on track.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that one of the things I've been really pleased about with the portal is if you look at the first episode with Peter, mm-hmm. who's my first guest, what is it like when you have two people with sort of almost opposite politics
right.
who get along great and see much of the world the same way?
It's important.
Yeah. And that's one of the, you know, like, let's be entirely honest. I've always treated Fox News as a sort of a propaganda arm of the Republican mm-hmm. Party.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the things that I'm starting to understand is the extent to which a lot of the other outlets are the propaganda arms of the other party. So, mm-hmm. And nobody seems to be able to report the news that runs counter to their narrative. Everybody can report the news that follows their narrative.
Right.
But what happens when a story starts to go counter to your narrative? It seems like nobody's able to do that at the moment, which yeah. is fascinating.
I can do it, Eric, if you give me a chance. Do you know what changed? I don't concern myself in any silo anymore, even though I know you're laughing at me. On the five.
Not really.
Okay. I don't see myself in a silo. I think I am more into like identifying how people persuade people,
right.
I think has become more of a – that's my portal.
Right.
Is the persuasion – you know what? It was a book by I had him on my podcast called Influence. Do you remember that guy I interviewed? Anyway. No, not Robert Wright, but close. Robert Cialdini. Robert Cialdini? Yeah. Wrote a book called Influence. I read that book, and it's all about persuasion and advertising, and it was just like – it's something that I felt that I always knew, but I never acknowledged. That's the portal. That's like that. It took me out into another place, and I've never been able to get back in.
Well, I'm always interested in differences between persuasion, manipulation, seduction.
Yeah.
And
like, is there any?
Well, you know, in general, we want – this came up on the Bret Easton Ellis episode. We want to be seduced.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, that is a form of manipulation, but it's somebody manipulating you to unleash something in the mind that you wouldn't be able to do for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the question is whether we feel well served by being manipulated. Like, well, that was a rousing speech.
Mm.
Well, did you just fool me into signing up to go to war?
Right.
Or did you just give a stirring speech that it's going to allow us to be victorious in battle? Those are two sort of different conjugations of the same idea.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in part with a low trust environment permeating everything, we're very wary of manipulation. But it turns out that we actually want to be manipulated, but to our own benefit.
It's interesting because what you're doing, and I would, you know, obviously Rogan, Sam Harris, Rubens, I would say Robert. I like Robert Wright's podcast because he's a leftist. He runs the it's called the Peaceful Resistor or something like that. Anti Trump, but he's an evolutionary guy. You know Robert Wright, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So
it's on Blogging Heads, right?
Yeah, Blogging Heads, and there's Scott Adams and the long form stuff that you're doing and that Rogan does is the antidote to what you're talking about, or at least the path for people. Who – because it's hard to manipulate somebody over 3 hours. You know, if you sit down and you're talking to somebody and you're just – and the conversation is going all over the place, you're taking somebody out. You're not injecting something into somebody's brain. You're letting them kind of figure it out. And you can find out whether this person is nuts or maybe half of what he's saying is real and half of it isn't. That's what I think – like I always say, you know, there's these moments in the podcast – history that brought the podcasting into the common mind. And one it was your interview with Sam Harris. It had to be like 3 years ago, right?
Which one? The one where
– The first one you did
okay.
with him. The first one you did. And I remember it because I listened to it – I think I listened to it like three times.
Okay.
And I listened to it because you were saying things that I hadn't heard before. And that got me so into like – that direction of podcast, like having the patience to sit and do. And it was almost like when you're talking about the guitar, about take. I was going back to college, but I was choosing my own curriculum.
Well, I think that there's a bunch of like there's a lot of movies where the only real academy is some secret place that you know is like not on the map. And
right.
you have to go down an alley in the back of Kathmandu in order to find out
yeah.
what's actually going on.
Yeah.
I think that in some sense, some of this long form stuff is filling that role, that there is the sense of, okay, I've exhausted everything. Why does none of this make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it has to do with the fact that the format of regular radio and TV is so based around compression and so based around – spats. Like, mm-hmm. let's see if we can get a really good spat going because that's going to be awesome TV.
Right.
And that creates this opposite demand, which is like, can we actually have something that doesn't look like a cockfight?
Yeah, yeah. It's true. I remember, though, from your podcast with Sam Harris, you said something that you basically predicted. I feel like you were predicting Trump was going to win.
Well, I bet heavily that this guy, who I also have had on the podcast, Timur Kuran, who's an economist at Duke, that his theory is that revolutions happen when we all are forced to lie to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone was forced to lie to each other, not necessarily that they loved Trump, but people were so effing sick of the Clintons.
Yeah, that's
it. Nobody wanted to admit, I hate the Clintons so much that I would consider voting for the Cat in the Hat to come in and play while mommy and daddy are gone.
Mm-hmm. No, it's true. You know, I remember it was so funny because I wasn't I didn't vote for Trump. I didn't vote for Hillary. I'm not even sure who I voted for because I think
Bubba
I might have. I think something that silly. I might have written my own name in it. But it was so funny because I was listening to Sam Harris interview Andrew Sullivan before the election. And the whole point of the whole point of the podcast was to talk about how you have to vote for Hillary and you under no circumstances can you vote for Trump. No circumstances. But they said, in fairness, we should talk about what's wrong with Hillary first before we get to that. And so Andrew Sullivan, who is the most anti-Trumper, spent 20 minutes dissecting Hillary. And then when he was done, it was like, you just did the – I can never look at Hillary the same again. It was pretty funny. They actually had achieved – I think they persuaded more people to vote for Trump than they intended to vote.
Well, this is like when NPR did this thing on ecstasy and like after everybody heard the piece on ecstasy, they said, where can I get some?
That's exactly right because I was like – and I was anti-Trump. I had – and Trump knew that and we were on the five from 2015 to the election was a cacophony. It was a pure war between people who had their choices and were so upset, and it was really ugly. And then when he got elected, I just wiped my slate clean and said deeds, not words, and realized that I've said this before that he's a 3-hour drive to 1 hour at the beach. You just have to it's bumpy, but then you get there, and there might be something good at the beach, but it'll be an hour.
I don't see anything good anywhere on the horizon. No, I really don't.
I know. You are looking at me with just such despair.
Well, not to mention disgust and disdain and other words that begin with D. No, it's not that. It's that we've gone insane. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to say, well, I like the Trump flavor of insanity.
Right.
Oh, really? I'm all for the Elizabeth Warren
don't
flavor.
Don't you like the fact that – I know that you don't. But there's something about the lack of trust in these media institutions that is so healthy. And we knew it all along. And now we've ripped it up. The illusion is gone because Trump yelling fake news isn't fake.
This is like the last days of the Ceausescus in Romania, but the last day is taking effing forever. You know, it's just like nobody buys this stuff anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and like I am on Fox saying that I view Fox as a propaganda arm, but I also view the New York Times as a propaganda arm and NPR as a propaganda arm. And my point has been to say, look, there is this weird thing about institutions talking to each other.
Right.
And we're forced to listen in on this conversation where it's like, well, so-and-so over at the New Yorker
exactly.
said that somebody at the Nation said, and I'm just like, who are any of you people?
Exactly. This is – I worked in men's magazines. Editors edited their magazine for other editors. It's just that insular way of living. There was a concept that you – you tweeted about it, but you also talked about it called the four quadrant model.
Yes.
And I love this. Can you explain it again just for the viewers?
I have failed previously. The only person who allowed me to explain the four quadrant model was Kathy Newman over at Channel 4 when she had Jordan Peterson in her sights. And every time Jordan Peterson opened his mouth, she would say, so what you're saying is that women are frail and stupid and need constant male protection like in Saudi Arabia. And he would say, well, I didn't actually say that. And so that move is the move of pushing somebody from one quadrant to the other. So let's say what the two axes are.
Okay.
Let's imagine that some group, some mainstream group, has a policy proposal that they want passed.
Mm-hmm.
Your strength of support for that policy proposal is on the x-axis. So if you oppose it, you're on the negative side. If you support it, you're on the positive side. And how positive you are or how negative you are determines how far out you are.
Mm-hmm.
On the y-axis is some imputed moral virtue.
Mm-hmm.
And how virtuous you are or how evil and despicable you are is plotted on the y-axis. So for example, let's take immigration.
Mm-hmm.
Let's imagine that there's a proposal to liberalize immigration and import more workers and more refugees and more or less fling open the borders.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So your support for that would be plotted on the x-axis. And so as a restrictionist, I would be in the negative side of that two-dimensional space. The y-axis would be how xenophobic are you?
Right.
How xenophilic are you? So if I'm xenophilic, I would get a positive score.
Right.
So I would think of myself as among the most xenophilic and the most restrictionist of people.
Which is interesting in itself.
Which I think is generic.
Yeah.
I think the average person – I mean, look, just think about the vote, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you have more people, you dilute your vote. Right?
Yes.
Like your share.
Right.
So who's excited about diluting their vote? Raise your hand. Nobody's excited about diluting their vote.
Good point.
Right. So what we have is we've got this idea that some group of people, which I call immigrantrepreneurs, that is Americans who make money off of immigration, have figured out that the great move is to say that anyone who opposes immigration expansion can only do it for one reason, and that is because they hate brown people.
Right.
They hate foreigners. They are suspicious of people who speak other languages.
Mm-hmm.
They don't get it. They don't order Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay, well, whatever that is. That's like insane.
Yeah.
And the fact that it hasn't cracked yet, that it seems like, well, that's very interesting. How can you be a xenophilic restrictionist?
Mm-hmm.
The only way that can be interesting is if everyone is not doing their job, because I think it's the generic position in the U.S. Most of us love foreigners, love foreign cultures, love all sorts of things. They're proud of our American immigrant past, and they don't want a current influx increased further, and they're interested in experimenting with decreasing it. And they're suspicious that large numbers of immigrants are here for an economic reason that has nothing to do with immigrants themselves. It's a question of transferring money from one group of Americans to another.
Mm-hmm.
And they're using immigrants. And if they could – I always say this. If they could use adorable puppy dogs rather than immigrants, they'd use that because that would be even more bulletproof.
Yes.
Are you against puppy dogs?
Yes. You know, this reminds me of something that you said about – holding positions on an issue like immigration, and you can correct me, my memory might be bad, but you discuss it like you should look at an issue like a portfolio where you have long and short. Can you explain? Do you remember that?
Sure.
Yeah. So you can have things that seem contradictory, but they aren't.
Well, like I'm long choice in the first trimester, and I'm short choice right before birth.
Right. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like, oh, well, we can't allow somebody to dine a la carte or to form relative value positions. So it's sort of the analog of long only investing. If you're only allowed to hold a portfolio of stocks all in the long position, then you're like a mutual fund.
Right.
But if you're like a professional investor, you're going to say, well, I'm not really long tech or short tech. I'm long, large platforms, and I'm short startups at the moment, you know, or something like that. And so that kind of ability to hone and craft surgical positions is essential for leading a rich life. And a large function of the partisan media is to make it impossible.
Exactly.
And this is the whole point that I was trying to get at the four quadrant model.
Right.
In the positive quadrant where you hold the virtue, but you also support the mainstream, I call those the dupes.
Mm-hmm.
If you are in the negative-negative quadrant, that is, you have the vice and you oppose it, I call those the troglodytes. Those are people who are like, I don't want those Mexicans crossing our borders.
Right. Right.
Okay. Then you've got these other two, which are the really interesting quadrants. You have people who are actually often xenophobic expansionists. So, for example, slave owners once upon a time were xenophobic expansionists. They wanted more slaves from Africa and they didn't like them one bit.
Right.
Okay. And in the quadrant that I live in, you want a restriction because you actually want your fellow Americans to be able to put pressure on their employers by pulling in the supply curve of labor, trying to make wages go up, let's say something like that.
That's something Trump is for, right?
Well,
maybe.
Everybody's trying to figure out.
Yeah.
So this is the first principle thinker.
Yeah.
Quadrant.
Right.
And the whole goal of the partisan media is to make it impossible to live in that quadrant.
Right.
And
exactly.
to hide the existence of the fourth quadrant, mm-hmm. which are the ne'er-do-wells who are for these policies but actually hold them for totally selfish reasons, not for the virtue that they usually will advertise.
I think it's if people listen to that again and absorb it, it'll
well, it's the one model that will change your life.
Like, yeah.
if you just watch every position that you hold that you fear somebody – like if you have a position on trans, like I'm not entirely sure that I want to see trans women trouncing mm-hmm. Genetic women in sports.
Right.
Well, you know that within 4 seconds, your position is going to be recharacterized as, wow, you really don't like these people.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, it actually has absolutely nothing to do with it. What is that move?
Right.
That is the move which says, so what you really mean is X. And that
right.
is the pull down from quadrant two, where you find very decent people who are also contrarians.
Mm-hmm.
And you try to turn them into troglodytes.
Right.
You son of a
Yeah.
You just don't accept that people are different from you.
Yeah. And you know what's happening? It's what you brought up Jordan Peterson earlier with the Newman interview, which was legendary. The quadrant is designed to eliminate contrarians, right? To people, the oddball. You're an oddball.
You're right.
Yeah. You could go – I consider myself an oddball. I would go I've been targeted for stuff I've said.
Yeah.
You know, that's – and this quadrant is how they target you.
Well, this is – it's one move.
Mm-hmm.
The one move is there's only one reason for opposing us, and that's because you're a bad person.
Yes.
And the idea is that once you unmask that one move – I mean, I admit that the model is ever so slightly complicated, but 10 minutes
– Yeah. Just – yes.
It's fine, and it'll change your life because what you see is that every single thing – it's like, I really don't know if I love NAFTA as an agreement. Wow, you're a protectionist.
Yeah.
You fear you can't compete because you just don't got the mojo, right?
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
what did you just do in that tiny little move?
Yeah.
So I'm trying to blow the media up by unmasking what they actually do. Another one of these games is Russell conjugation.
What's that?
Well, this is what Frank Luntz figured out, but he didn't realize that he figured it out. Bertrand Russell made this point years ago on the BBC
mm-hmm.
Where he conjugated this concept. He said, I am steadfast. You are stubborn, and he, she, or it is a pig-headed fool. And the weird thing is we didn't notice that in English, we call things synonyms when they have the same underlying meaning.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're emotionally shaded in different directions,
mm-hmm.
we still call them synonyms. So fink and whistleblower are two conjugations of the same underlying concept. They're technically synonyms.
Right.
But the emotional instruction –
Mm-hmm.
is to tell you how you should feel. And we focus so much on critical thinking. We don't focus on critical feeling.
Mm.
We focus on group think. Nobody talks about group feel.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody says things like, hey, you're overfeeling this.
Yes.
Right? Like
yeah.
all day on Twitter, there's an entire group of people, you can call it feeling Twitter, that they feel everything. And, they,
right.
and they're coercing you to
yeah.
feel as they do.
Yeah.
So where we are in all of this is that we don't recognize that the media is instructing us emotionally by giving us whatever shading of the words mm-hmm. are going to grip our heart. So oddly, we are in general for an estate tax and against the death tax.
Right. Yes.
They're the same thing.
Same thing. Yeah.
We want to get rid of illegal aliens and we want to support our undocumented workers.
Right.
And, you know, this is just how nuts we are.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't recognize – of course, other people are nuts. Like none of this would ever work on me. You want to know why all the pricing in the bodega is $9.99 or $4.99? It's because other people fall for it. I would never fall
never.
For it.
You know what's – okay. It's so – I was thinking of how you describe Twitter. It's that tweet where the person just writes, I'm shaking. Do you ever see those tweets?
Yeah,
I'm shaking. It's like, and it's this. It is a virtue signaling. Virtue signal. By the way, you had there's like three concepts I wanted to hit on. What you were talking about. You talk about the media, kind of pushing this quadrant
theory.
You
want to do vice signaling?
Yes, vice signaling. I was just thinking about the vice signaling. I think I mentioned it on the five. And credited you. I love because I didn't realize. Like I vice signal all the time.
Yeah.
To get ahead of people who are gonna address my vices.
Well, yeah. Well, this is the estufagem strategy.
Mm-hmm.
So Madeira wine is oxidized and heated Mm-hmm. And that's why it doesn't go bad, because the bad things that happen to wine that ruin it have already happened to Madeira when it's produced.
Ah.
And so you can open a bottle of Madeira from 100 years ago and it's still drinkable.
Wow.
Right? Okay. So what you're doing is you're beating yourself up. That's what I did with the intellectual dark web. Mm-hmm. I created something that the media would hate on,
yeah,
and they would spread it, but it was already pre-beaten up. So you can't do much worse than
exactly
like some intellectual place analogous to where you order hits from contract killers and child pornography and whatnot. Mm-hmm.
Do you think vice signaling is a good preventive measure? Because we're watching –
it's like, lousy to have to do it.
Yeah.
Right? Because like I don't love falling over backwards saying what a horrible person I am. But like I'm not that great. No, nobody is. You probably aren't either. And this idea that we're all given this like – assumption. Well, I thought he was a reasonable person. Well, I'm not a reasonable person. And, you know, all these virtues, if you ascribe that to me and now you're disappointed, whose problem is that? What I loved was I started following this guy, Dan Bilzerian.
Oh, him.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was an Instagram promoter, self-promoter kind of guy.
No,
he's running for president, right?
Maybe. I hope so. He's an authentic, crazy genius.
Yeah.
And his thing is, I love guns, girls and drugs.
Yes.
And so when you find out that the guy wants to get high and take a bunch of hot chicks and arm them with automatic weapons and shoot at pumpkins out in the desert, and you're like, well, he's the kind of a guy who would enjoy putting scantily clad women in the desert in the middle of the night coked up with automatic weapons. He's like, yeah, that's my thing.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I do.
Yeah, that effectively negates that criticism. Well, that's very specific.
But it teaches us something about us.
Yeah.
In other words, we're not as sensitive to the absolute. We're as sensitive to the relative fall. You told me you were such a good person, mm-hmm, and now I find out the truth.
Yeah.
So he's got one photo on Instagram, which I love, where he's offering this beautiful young woman a hand up a step somewhere in Greece, and he's there, you know, chiseled and shirtless, and it says, come with me, I'll ruin your life, but we'll have fun. And there's something about doing that honestly that like one out of seven people is going to say okay.
Yeah. You know, but to you, to the point of your quadrant theory, it's not necessarily just – it's not the media. It's actually – isn't it really an energized, modern kind of activist, a lonely, alienated group of people that are using this as a way to lash out.
No, but let's be fair to them. Yeah. We have not left much for Gen X, mm-hmm, and the millennials and Gen Z in comparison to what the silent generation and then boomers had.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you and I are strangely just on opposite sides of the generational dividing line. You, sir, are the last of the boomers.
I know.
I am the first of the Xers.
Yes. 64. You what, 65? 66?
Yes, 65. Damn you, Greg Gutfeld. You stole my future.
Yes.
No, but we did.
Blame me. Yeah.
But here's the problem. Things got into really bad trouble in the early 1970s. There were some strange structural changes. The silent generation tried to figure out how to get things back onto an authentic growth path.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't work. And the boomers said, oh, okay, all that stuff that you're doing may not be good enough to restart real growth, but it's good enough for fake growth. And
right.
So we're just going to transfuse you, younger generation, so that we can live out our lives in the style to which we've become accustomed. And no kidding. These generations, the Gen Xers tried to do the thing that the millennials were doing and it didn't really work.
Mm-hmm.
And the millennials watched the Xers and saying, wow, there isn't really a corporate ladder.
Yes.
That's a rope ladder that's fraying and on fire and I'm not falling for that. And so what did they do? They figured out all kinds of ways to jam the system.
Mm-hmm.
And so in some sense, think of this as like a giant work slowdown.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like these guys are just not cooperative. You didn't give them a future. So now guess what? Now you're going to have socialism. Now you're going to have all kinds of, you know, racist stuff in the streets. Now, there's nothing for these people that's going to allow them to have confidence that they can take out a 30-year mortgage. They can take out a 25-year commitment to three children in a decent city that they want to live in. Like that's a real problem.
Mm-hmm.
And it's time for people who have won their entire lives to lose.
Mm. Well, that's very stark.
Well, we need genie negative stuff. This is something that I work on with my wife a bit, which mm-hmm. is a lot of the propositions that are really exciting to people are things that reverse income inequality. Now, mm-hmm. on the right, these things are going to sound like nationalism.
Right.
Like we have to redo our trade agreements and close the borders and all that kind of stuff. Those are attempts at Gini negative stuff.
Mm-hmm.
On the left, you're going to have more stuff like universal basic income
right.
or wealth taxes. Mm-hmm. And so the interesting thing is that all of these Gini negative things that reverse our levels of income and asset inequality don't feel very good.
Mm-hmm.
What's Andrew doing? He's just going to give free money? We know where that money is coming from.
Right.
There's no such thing as a freedom dividend.
Yeah.
You know, or on the other side, well, what are we going to do? We're just going to lock out the rest of the world and turn our back on our own traditions?
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Andrew, how can he be – what is he described as? A tech entrepreneur? Is that kind of what he is?
I don't think they fit him with a good description.
Yeah.
He's a platypus.
Because I saw his net worth. It should be a lot higher if you're going to be that guy. It's like I keep finding it to be like 1 million to 2 million. So that's kind of unusual. I expect him to be like that guy you mentioned, Dan.
Yeah, but you wouldn't trust him if he'd made money. You wouldn't trust him if he didn't make
true.
Money. We're not going to trust him at all.
Yes, that's true.
There's nothing he can do that can be right. And he has to be left off all CNN, MSNBC graphics because they are using all of these – like, it's insane that they really think that this is like 1993.
Yeah. Well, I interrupted you. You were just about to make a point, and now I can't remember where you were. Do you remember? No?
No.
No. They're good, because then I want to transition.
Okay.
I want to transition to your tweets on Jeffrey Epstein.
Yeah.
Because I find it – I think that one of the most recent ones was the Jeffrey Epstein I met would never, in all caps, have killed himself. Lots of folks met him. He was a bizarre personality. Find me anyone he met who found that personality compatible with a simple suicide. If he just hung himself, then the person we met was a character played by an actor.
Yep.
That's pretty strong. So you think he was murdered?
I am agnostic.
Nah. All right.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
I mean, I don't know if he's alive or dead. My assumption is that he's dead.
Yeah.
And it's a very small probability that he's alive, but I'm not discounting that.
I have a friend who believes that too.
Okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't waste a minute worrying about him being alive, but
yeah.
I'm going to formally keep that option open.
Yeah.
Here's where the weirdness comes from. I met him, I think, in 2003 or four.
Mm-hmm.
So before he got arrested and sentenced in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked out of the meeting and I called my wife back then and I said, I just met a construct. And she mm-hmm. said, what do you mean? I said, this is not an authentic human being.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way this story makes a whit of sense.
Yes.
And I have been talking for 15 years about the fact that I don't think that this was an authentic human being. I don't think he was a hedge fund trader. I don't think he made money from the markets.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he was all that interested in science, as he claims to be.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that he had a trading operation at Villard House over in Madison Avenue. I don't think any of this stuff was – and I've said it while he was alive.
Yeah.
So for 15 years, I've been using one word with everyone I know who has any connection with him, that he's a construct. I've told people, in general, stay away.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't known what he – what is he doing there? The story doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
There were two stories when I was in New York that made no sense. And one was Bernie Madoff and mm-hmm. the other one was Jeffrey Epstein.
Mm-hmm.
And I assumed in the case of Bernie Madoff that he was front running his real business in his hedge fund. And so that's how he was making money. That turned out not to be correct. It was a Ponzi scheme. Fine.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of Jeffrey Epstein, I figured that he was a construct probably tied to the intelligence agencies,
mm-hmm.
not necessarily ours.
Right.
And what I see now is something like a gravitational or Einstein lens. So dark matter can't be seen directly. And mm-hmm. I have a principle which is called the invisible world is first detected in the visible world's failure to close. That is, you learn about things that you can't see by watching things that you can see behave in ways that make no sense.
Right.
So if you have a massive object, it bends the light all around it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, what's going on with this Epstein story? Ghislaine Maxwell is somewhere.
Yeah.
She has a passport, presumably. I would imagine people would want to know where she is. It's
right.
very hard to hide a person like that. At least tell us where was the last place she was sighted.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I don't believe that story at all. I don't believe a story in which nobody publishes denials from intelligence agencies. Say we can categorically say that this pedophile had nothing to do with our intelligence agency. Nobody's running that story. Mm-hmm. You could sell papers debunking conspiracy theories. The interest in Jeffrey Epstein's death is so extreme that if you believe that this is all nonsense, you could sell papers just showing it to be nonsense. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
This story is the most bizarre story of our lives because it shows us that something is radically broken in what we think our newspaper and news programs are.
It's amazing how when he died, how we did on our
– Did you ever meet him?
No, I've never met him.
The hairs on the back of your neck would be standing straight up.
That's why I get waxed because I don't like the hairs. We did a day – we led the show with his suicide. I do the air quotes and we're not being taped. And then it went away. It was the fastest story to disappear, right? It's like it was almost like the joke he didn't kill himself was so obvious kind of that it was treated as a joke and nobody bothered to follow up.
No, but the entire internet is just like
– Yes.
Everybody's watching a magic show for children that expects the lights to be off and the children to be not that quick. And in fact, it's being performed for grownups in a house with the lights up and everyone's looking saying, are you effing kidding me?
Yeah.
Like this is clear – this story is so off.
Yeah.
And I just don't want to live in a world in which I have to fear that I took a meeting with a guy to discuss finance and science. I knew something was weirdly, wildly, crazily off.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have no idea how crazy this guy was.
Yeah. A buddy of mine whose parents I guess were in the FBI is convinced that it was a body double. And he went through it just how the body was moved out.
I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Because that's bad conspiracy theorizing. Mm-hmm. And the fact is good conspiracy theorizing is when you say, I can see that there's a distortion and it is not my responsibility to tell you what happened.
Right.
Okay. So I can say what the decision tree is and I can tell you that I can put odds on each branch.
Mm-hmm.
But the key thing is don't get tempted into saying, oh, I know it's really going – because you don't.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that we know that's really going on is that there is a broad consensus that this story should not be reported in a natural fashion.
Mm-hmm.
That is what we know. And we know that with near certainty.
It's crazy. If you were – are you writing a book at all?
Maybe.
Yeah, you. No, the guy behind you.
Yeah.
I figured you must be writing a book.
People try to get me to write books, and I don't.
Is it because – I know – I mean I've
– I'm terrified of what would happen if it was a success.
Ugh, jeez.
No, not kidding. I mean look, part of the problem is that I've been sitting on this way of thinking for a very long time. This is the first time when it is possible to be me in public, and I'm not – entirely convinced that it's a safe thing to be. So, you know, one of the things that I've been talking about recently is what I call slipping the disc. Mm-hmm. And the disc stands for the distributed idea suppression complex. And the disc is the thing that takes interesting ideas, ideas that might lead us away from the patterns that we've been thinking about and into new territory that might be more virtuous, more productive, but it also could be highly disruptive to the current power players. And for approximately 50 years, ideas have tended to die quickly. Like good ideas have been suppressed. So I believe that we are coming out of this like 50-year bubble where it's the first time I'm really hopeful that ideas can propagate. And you see the hatred that comes for new ideas that might show that the institutional players are full of it or that there might be something much better.
Yeah. Wait, how did Thiel find you? Like, where did you? I mean, like, what were you doing before that? Were you a professor?
I was originally doing mathematics in order to. I was using mathematics first to as a stalking horse to approach theoretical physics, and then I shifted a bit into economics and used something called gauge theory in neoclassical economics. Then went over to finance, one of the first papers on mortgage-backed securities in 2001, 2002 with Adil Abdullali, talking about how the world would end from these things. And it was a little bit early.
yeah.
And then, And then, you know, the weirdest thing that I do is I'm trying to figure out why theoretical physics has stalled out since about 1973, 74, when the so-called standard model was put in place. Mm-hmm. And where do we go next? Because I am hell-bent on breaking, if possible, the restrictions that the good Dr. Einstein saddled us with.
Mm. Where are you on string theory? I can't believe I'm asking you that question, as if I even know what string theory is. But you talk about string theory.
Well, string theory, you know, is many different things, mm-hmm. but mostly what it is an organizing principle for the baby boomer generation within theoretical physics in order to indicate that they are still capable and hardworking without any demonstrable successes as measured by the Nobel Committee.
Right.
Right? So that it is, in essence, a product that never ships in the standard terms of theoretical physics. Now, it comes out of the quantum field theory universe. So these guys are extremely good. It attracted the best and the brightest. But the current revolution is more than, you know, it's about 35 years old. And I don't think it's going to go past the baby boom. We didn't understand the extent to which it was really a generational phenomenon. These guys have not been able to make progress. This is the biggest stall in modern physics. And they've been using this, I would say, it's like generals using war games to keep up their skills rather than fighting actual wars, so that rather than doing things that look like actual physics, they do string theory to make sure that they're in reasonably good shape.
Mm. That's a good analogy. I'm going to steal it.
They won't like it. You're going to get thrown out of the Institute for Advanced Study, Greg.
I'm going to use it on the five, though. I'm going to in the B block, when we're talking about impeachment, I'm going to bring up string theory.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's going to go over really well.
Bloosh.
Why aren't you going to
me to write a book?
Yes.
Okay.
I would. It's overdue. Although the interesting thing, though, is Tucker Carlson said this to me. There's no point in doing books anymore. If you are doing what you're doing, you have direct impact.
Yeah.
Then
better. No.
Yeah.
He's wrong.
He's wrong?
Yeah. Because there's something about the archival,
mm-hmm.
right? And the idea is that what we're doing in long form has the feel of ephemera. Even if you can store all of these shows.
Right. It's gone.
You know, and you need the indexing. You need curation. So in some sense, books are playing a different role than they used to, but I think it's hard to move away from that form completely.
Yeah. Is there anybody you like in the current field, the Democrats, that you like?
Look, in essence, what you have to do is you have to extract various parts of various people.
Right.
So I like Tulsi giving it back to Hillary. That was awesome.
Yeah, she's the Terminator.
Yeah, but I don't necessarily feel so comfortable with some of her foreign involvement.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I like Andrew Yang a tremendous amount. He's a friend of mine.
Yeah.
I'm not as excited about UBI as I am about Andrew Yang.
Right. I think most people are like that.
Well, I think that, you know, I found Bernie to be kind of heartfelt, decent, and reminds us of what progressivism was circa 1950-something.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not updated, right?
Yeah.
And so I believe, like, he's a maverick. Mm-hmm. But it's not as cool to be a socialist when socialism might actually come back. And so I'm very scared about – I'm long progressivism, short socialism, communism, really,
right.
In some sense.
Yeah, okay.
And, you know, Elizabeth Warren, I think, is extremely competent. You've got that kind of Harvard vibe. But I find that she – can stick her finger into the air and tell which way the wind blows in a way that I can't take.
Yeah.
You know, and then Trump, to give him his due, is the first person who figured out how to go up against the entire system and survive. And unfortunately, he comes with all of this crazy stuff that is deranging our entire culture. And I think it's a completely irresponsible thing to do. You know, I make the joke about the old lady who swallowed a fly, and I say, I know a young nation that voted a Trump.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we voted a Trump to get rid of the Clintons. And that was a very dangerous move because I know how that song ends.
Yeah. My sense of it always is I've divorced myself with the behavior
Greg.
I don't know, though.
Greg.
Yeah, go ahead.
We all know this is wrong.
You can't use that argument.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think you can. I think you have,
Greg,
to look at
person to person. This guy is not fit for office.
I don't know. I disagree, but
no,
I don't.
You, no, you don't.
Yeah. Look at you. You're trying to shrink me.
He's destroying what I call the oral Torah of the United States. You know, whatever our culture is, he's getting rid of some rot.
Mm-hmm.
Let's give him his due. I don't have Trump derangement syndrome.
No, that's fair. I think it is a phenomenon that I did not see coming. And so I'm always careful of having any kind of emotional response to it because my emotional response earlier blinded me.
I'm always early. And I always say that early is another name for wrong, right? Yeah. So I wrote this essay years ago on kayfabe as the most important scientific theory nobody knows. And of course, it wasn't – it's standard scientific theory. It's the system of lies that professional wrestling uses for a fake sport.
Right.
And Donald Trump came out of the WWE. He understood the suspension of disbelief issue, that people will – have a divided mind, and the part of them that knows that this is all nonsense will also be side by side with the part of their mind that actually believes this stuff. And this is a very dangerous thing to experiment with the one thing that professional wrestling understands much better than any psychology department at any university.
So you're falling into this world that I am skeptical of, though, this bad thing that's about to happen.
Which is?
Doesn't happen. That's what I mean. This thing that – this I keep being told that something awful is about to happen and I haven't seen it yet. And maybe it'll happen.
This is my point. Yeah. We have had the best luck for – you know, since 1945. We somehow got through the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Yeah, that's true.
We somehow had the Soviet Union wrap up without the World War that we thought might have accompanied that.
Yeah.
I've said that the gated institutional narrative has only broken maybe three or four times in my lifetime. One was 9/11. One was the fall of Lehman Brothers. One was the election of Donald Trump. And the last one was the death of Jeffrey Epstein. These are times when the media cannot figure out how to come up with a fictional narrative fast enough.
That's your book, what you just did. Those, if you just focused on those events and that's your book. Those are your chapters.
Okay.
I just did.
What's my advance?
Your advance will probably be – I would demand $750,000.
Is my agent?
Yes. I'll be your agent.
Okay.
I'll work it through. You know, you could probably get a better agent than me.
Okay.
Go to William Morris. I can get you a good agent.
Greg, what do you really want to talk about, man?
I'm done.
What?
I have to go get makeup.
No.
It's three –
Dude, you look fine.
No, I have to –
You're very attractive, Greg.
No, thank you. You know, that means a lot coming from you, Eric, because it's 3:52.
Yeah.
I get makeup at 4 o'clock.
Okay, fine.
Yeah. But this was great.
This was great.
Well, we covered – like I had 8 pages of notes and I didn't even have to look down at them. Well, I looked down at them a couple times. But I wanted to find – is there anything missing? I had other questions, but we'll save that for part 2.
Let's plug the portal. The portal.
The portal. All right. So if you guys haven't checked out Eric's podcast, it's called The Portal. Where do you find it? You just plug it in – portal, and there it is.
I would look for The Portal on Apple, on Spotify, on Stitcher, or go to YouTube. I mean, or I would say, and go to YouTube.
Yeah.
Find my channel there and click subscribe and the bell icon to be notified when we drop our next episode. I think our next drop will be Sam Harris.
Ooh, that'll be fun.
Yeah.
That'll be fun.
I tried to figure out things we could fight about given that we agree. And I may have used a little bit too much aggression on that episode.
Yeah, I haven't been listening to a lot of his lately just because the political stuff just kind of like – I try not to bring politics home.
Right.
My wife refuses it in the house.
Yeah.
You know? So
– look, I also want to say something else.
Yeah.
You put no restrictions on me, and I think it's to Fox's credit that you guys will have somebody on who will say something like, I think Fox is part of a propaganda network, and you guys are like, welcome.
Yeah.
And it speaks very well of you. I think that on the other side, it's astounding to me that when I go on – this is the first time I've been on Fox.
Yeah.
I know what they're going to say. I was like, you went on Fox.
Oh, you're going to get crap for
Well,
it.
I know. But like how transparent is that game?
Yeah, exactly. And that's why the intellectual dark web wasn't created as a response to Fox. It was a response to the death of classical liberalism
wouldn't even say classical liberalism. Most people in it are left of center. It's the idea that somehow if you don't live in Brooklyn and have some crazy position that was formed in the English department, then somehow you are to the right of Adolf Hitler. I think that I hope that strain of American idiocy is in its death throes and that it doesn't take responsible progressivism down, because we need libertarians, we need conservatives, we need progressives, and we need them to be interoperable and to fight each other decently and not in this method that seems to be like a blood sport where we're convinced that somehow we're all in the throes of some sort of genocidal madness if the other guys get into power. I think that, you know, we have to remember ourselves and to get back to wanting a loyal opposition. So it's been a pleasure to be on your show.
And that's why we need you, and we need your book, which will be out in it'll be spring 2021, just to give you some time. And we already know we already kind of have the proposal worked out. Just need a really strong title. Could be called The Portal.
Could be called The Portal.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, let's see if any lonely book publishers out there are flocking to my door.
Well, I know my agent listens to this podcast, Jay Mandel, and he's one of the best. I bet he'll call you on Monday.
Really?
Well, wait, this will air on Monday. He'll call you on Tuesday.
Okay.
Thank you, Eric.
Thank you, sir.
Awesome. Bye, everybody.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.